Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. I'm Donovan.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Samuel.
All right, gentlemen, and I do use that term loosely.
Careful.
I know, right? I'm going to start with you, Sam. What you been up to?
Since the last time, there's something else that I'll probably cover next time because it's evergreen. But in my world of video gaming, I started getting into Fallout 76. It is the MMORPG version of Fallout, which weirdly enough, AKA, is the version of Fallout that hasn't pissed me off yet. Because every single other one, like that universe is coded to me like catnip built for me because I love it to bits. But I always ran into some big thing where I go, I'm rage quitting now. I hate this. I can't possibly, you know, like it always felt unfair and I just flipped the table, right? But for some reason, 76 isn't that. Plus, it's set in Appalachia. So we get post-apocalyptic Appalachia.
So, oh, wow. That's your neck of the woods.
Fun. Yep. It's West Virginia part of Appalachia, but considering they're adding Ohio in the latest update, along with the ghoul from the television show, and yes, he is voiced by Walton Goggins.
Hell yeah.
Very nice. But yeah, so
let me some Goggins.
Oh yeah. He's amazing. Like as a human being, like, but yeah, essentially they had it for cheap on Steam, like $9. And I asked a friend, I was like, is this worth anything? They went, yeah, pretty good. So I tried it. They were right. So I'm into Fallout 76 now. And it's very fun running around Appalachia going, oh my God, this is so, so accurate as to what us would be post-apocalypse. Like the first time I heard the phrase Cult of the Mothman, I lost my mind. And if you're in the area, you know what that means. Like it's very specific. So I loved it.
That sounds like a pretty good ROI. You only spent what, $9 on it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's your standard inventory management, stuff like that. Yeah. There is a, you know, monthly you can do and you get more inventory and all that stuff, but you can totally play it for free and be fine.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, normally, you know, titles are anywhere from $50 to $90, depending. So that's the reason why I'm saying that's, of course, now that game's been out for a number of years, so I can understand why it's around that price point. But sometimes to me, that's when you get them. So.
Wholesome community too. They will help a newbie out like that. So,
oh, that's nice. That's nice. I hate getting into a game and then finding out that the people that are in there are just complete dicks. And you're like, well, I'm trying to learn. And they're like, go away. Like, well, I'm not here for you then. So, all right. Sounds good. Ben, what about you?
Well, you know, there comes a time of year when you don't want to leave the house. I mean,
that starts January 1st. Summer. January 1st to December 31st.
Well, like there's summer when it's too hot.
Yeah.
And then winter when it's too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, you know, spring and fall too, just because it's Georgia. We're allergic to something.
I was going to say spring, allergies, fall, leaves.
So I've been looking for a new hobby that I can do just in one room that I might really enjoy. And that is making electronic music.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I got this MIDI controller. I'm holding it up for those of you listening in black and white. That was a mistake. I shouldn't have got that yet.
Oh, okay.
That's like organizing, turning on and off tracks simultaneously. I haven't even made a track yet. So,
well, at least you got it when you do.
So I went back to the Amazon and I got this MPK Mini. Mm-hmm. From Akai Professional. And I learn like a couple of millimeters worth of it every week.
It's
kind of a learning curve with which software to use, how to program this thing. Because it doesn't just show up and work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of fun. Maybe eventually I'll have something to sample on the show.
Oh, that'd be nice. Well, you know what? What make us a custom jingle for SGN.
A custom jingle?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Like something to hit during the show or
the intro to the show. Yeah, okay. Opening and close. Make some custom jingle because I forget what I'm using. I'm using royalty free, but I think I may be using something from transistor.fm, which they are they're a podcast host. I've used them before. They're really good. I used them several years ago before they got into having any dynamic ad insertion and that kind of stuff. But they've got a handful, maybe 10, 15 freely available, whether you host with them or not. Just go grab them. And I got every one of them, and I've used them. I always do my best to make sure that they get recognition. And as you'll notice, it's at the bottom of the show notes where you can go find these. So even though I'm not using them as a podcasting boost platform, you know, go check out the music. You might find something you like. But cool. Yeah, you get good enough, you make us an intro and an outro.
Yeah. Maybe I can clip some funny... some funny lines out of a previous episode.
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah.
I like it.
Start doing mashups and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I know of some shows, I've heard some shows, let me put it that way, that's what they've done is, you know, and I know it's a lot of extra work, but they've got like a standard bed that they'll play as an intro, and then it'll just be like funny clips from the previous couple of episodes. And they'll update it occasionally and kind of like
that. Or has someone that does that frequently.
Ah, yeah. Well, you know, when you can get to the status of Scott Johnson. Anyway. All right. Is that it, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Early Deadmau5 days.
There you go.
Yeah, we got to figure out what your big ass helmet is going to be. We haven't figured that part out yet.
I like it.
I think it's just going to be a fat head. Just
yes.
Me.
Yes.
There in my own fat head. Yeah. Oh. And I'll just go by the name Ego.
Ego. All right.
No, then we'd have to have a big fat head of Donovan. I mean,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. As long as I can get through the door, that's all I need. I haven't done anything really fun. Let's just put it that way. I've just worked. Did some upgrades to Windows 11 machines, went smoothly, put in a Proxmox server yesterday so a customer could, start remoting into a Windows desktop and doing contract work for the company they used to work for. That's it. That's my life. I will tell y'all something off air, right? After we end this, about a friend of mine and his wife, but
keep the audience wondering.
Yeah, well, it's not something I want to share publicly. It's his to share.
No, you never tell him, but we're just going to let him know that there's something we're going to share that they're not privy to.
Yeah. And if you want that audio, it'll cost you $19.95 on OnlyFans anyway.
Per month.
Per month. No, it's a PPA, pay per audio, instead of a PPV, pay-per-view. All right, let's get started. First up, TP-Link confirms successful Wi-Fi 8 trials, next-gen wireless standard to usher in advances in reliability and latency. Ben, how many Wi-Fi 7 devices have you actually deployed?
Zero.
Really?
Maybe the latest ones that I put in this, like last spring, might be Wi-Fi 6.
Wi-Fi, okay.
Yeah.
I have put in... one Ubiquiti Wi-Fi 7 Pro. I put in 3 Wi-Fi 7 wall units. That's at a residence, friend of mine, former boss, basically. And I used a TP-Link wireless router for a customer because I needed to replace their Wi-Fi, and their Wi-Fi access point was their router. One of those scenarios, which always drives me nuts because I want them separated. I want a firewall and I want separate access points, but it's a small business with 2 computers. And I was like, screw it. You know, let's go with this. And I went with one of those TP-Link units that looks like it's an alien spaceship. And I mean, it works. It works great. The Sam, do you even know what you've got as far as, are you Wi-Fi 5, 6?
I do not know. Okay. I as usual, am representing the normal person that isn't in IT, right? And like, yeah. I cannot remember what it is at this point. It's like, I will continue to use one and update it until essentially I have to upgrade. You know how that works.
Yeah. So you've got a Wi-Fi router combo. Or you have a separate firewall and a separate access point.
Just we've got
you got the one unit.
Like Uncle make him feel like he's at his job, folks. Watch this. This will be fun. We have a modem and we have a router.
Okay.
Two separate things.
Okay.
All that's right. The best I can give you.
Well, at least it's not a modem router combo. Those really just peeve me off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of cable companies want to do. They want to, Mediacom's bad about this. They'll, like, whenever I had Mediacom here previously, I had to go in. Had to find out how to go in and turn off their Wi-Fi. And it was aggravating because I needed it in bridge mode. I didn't need it to be a router. So anyway, okay, well, that's cool. Because the reason why I ask, and, you know, Ben and I being in this industry and knowing that we do deploy these things, we're just now getting into the whole Wi-Fi 7. If we start replacing stuff, there's a very good chance that both of us will use Wi-Fi 7 gear. And here we are talking about Wi-Fi 8. So TP-Link confirmed successful Wi-Fi 8. They're calling it 802.11bn trials. It marks a key milestone in the next generation wireless development. The test validated the Wi-Fi 8 beacon and data throughput using prototype hardware, but with a joint industry partnership. And they said likely it involved Qualcomm. And the goal of Wi-Fi 8 is not to give you a massive speed jump, but it's to give better quality, lower latency, and stronger real-world performance. You still get your 2.4, your 5, and your 6 gigahertz bands. 4,096 QAM. I'm probably the only one here. Maybe Ben does know, but nope. I know what that is. And 320 megahertz bandwidth with Wi-Fi 7. It's still rated at 46 gigabit per second max, but it aims for 25% faster real-world speeds. And so what they did is they introduced these four major technologies. And this is all new to me. So I'm right here with you. I'm learning. Coordinated spatial reuse, CO-SR. It optimizes power levels for cleaner signals, like the sound of that. Coordinated beamforming. Now, I know what beamforming is. This improves directional signal targeting. Dynamic subchannel operation boosts throughput by up to 80%. I like anything that boosts my throughput up to 80%. Just ask my wife. Enhanced modulation coding scheme refines data efficiency. So the benefits that we're hoping to realize out of Wi-Fi 8 will be stronger connections in crowded areas, less interference, smoother roaming, and better low signal performance. And of course, Wi-Fi 8 is right on the heels of Wi-Fi 7, which debuted only 2 years ago. 2023, Wi-Fi 7 router prices have since dropped and further declines are expected as Wi-Fi 8 hardware enters the market. So, yeah, Ben, you and I, we'll probably start using Wi-Fi 8 gear around about 2030, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a need for 46 gigs per second on the LAN. I mean, how am I going to...
No, you don't, but the more devices you have, that 46 gigabits is shared.
Yeah, but there's three APs here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not all on one, so...
Mm, that's true.
And there's not that many devices. But I'm sure in hotels,
yeah,
this would certainly make things better.
Hotels, and remember, I think you and I actually looked at some of the Wi-Fi 7 units that Ubiquiti makes for, like, being at stadiums and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, the price points definitely show that.
Well,
but I mean, what they're having to handle is just impressive.
Yeah, I think AT&T put the Wi-Fi configuration in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what it costs, but there's hundreds of miles of cable through there. Mm. I did the behind the scenes tour.
Yeah,
and none of that was brought up. None of it. All it's we like saw was we saw the doorway into rooms we couldn't go in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to be like Network Chuck. I want to go into the data center. I want to see the behind the scenes stuff. I want to see how all this shit works.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I might want to go take out a second mortgage and do it for my house.
Yeah. I mean, Mercedes-Benz Stadium was only like $1.5 billion.
I mean, only.
So I'm sure the network, they weren't too concerned about her AP costs. Probably since AT&T probably footed that anyway.
Yeah, there's a very good chance. All right, well, we'll see how that, you know, we'll probably start seeing, forget what they call them, but reference units. We'll probably start seeing reference boxes come out in the next year or two. Where it's like, well, this isn't ratified, but you know, this is where we are now, and we'll give you a firmware update as soon as things change and kind of thing.
Yeah, and Ubiquiti and even TP-Link, probably TP-Link more likely to offer NFR units to resellers for shiggles.
Now maybe we can get some.
I'd rather have NVIDIA send me a box than TP-Link.
You want the DGX?
I just want to say I have one.
After the network chuck video, you want the DGX? Really?
The free one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can sell it and build a decent rig.
I'm telling you. Oh. So this next story, I actually reached out to one of my real estate clients and asked him about this. And it was interesting. So that perfect looking house for sale may have an owner using AI to virtually enhance the listing. What we're talking about here is AI virtual staging, which lets sellers digitally enhance the home photos, adding furniture or upgrades to boost appeal. Broker Matthew Ping, I love that name, Ping, spotted a listing where the lawn, the roof, and the facade were AI enhanced, real changes that would have cost somewhere around about $100,000. And AI images should be labeled to avoid misleading buyers, is what they're saying. Transparency is crucial. And realtors use AI platforms to restyle rooms in minutes, offering multiple design options at low cost. That I have no problem with. You see a lot of that now. I mean, even before AI, you'd see it on these building shows and how, you know, they'd go around and it's like, well, this is a fixer-upper, let's do this. And then they would give you the 3D rendering of what the place could look like when they're done with it, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, of course, the benefits here is faster, it's cheaper than physical staging, ideal for vacant or remote homes. The MLS rules say that you must disclose the edits, no altering room dimensions or property features. There are risks. Buyers may feel duped if homes look different in person. Some agents post before and after comparisons, and experts say that AI staging is less impactful emotionally than physical staging, but helps speed marketing and lower cost. And many stagers now use AI mainly for marketing tasks and workflow efficiency. It is seen as an evolution, not a revolution, likely to become a standard real estate tool. So reached out to one of my, actually I reached out to all of them, but only one of them responded, and he responded like within 10 minutes of me sending the email. And I asked him, I said, have you seen this? And he said, yes, right here in Tifton. And he gave me the address. He said there was a home that was on the market a long time because they used AI to make it look different, look better. And then when the prospective home buyers got there and saw the real house, they were disappointed. So that's something that they could be potentially running into, which means to me, they must have broken the MLS rules.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say about that. But anyway, I thought, whenever I come across this one, I was like, ooh, I know some real estate people. They're my clients. Let me see what they say. And it was interesting that right here in little old Podunk Tifton, we are seeing this, the same kind of thing. So be on the lookout for it. Not that I'm going to be buying a house. I'm here until I'm dead, I'm pretty sure.
Nope. I'm all fully stocked on houses.
Yep. I don't need a spare.
I do like that they've made rules for it, though, because that, I had initially a kind of reaction about it, but then whenever I found out, oh no, there are rules, you have to disclose this, you have to do all that, then that's whenever I went, okay, we have rails on this. We're not just going off of nowhere. Okay, that now I'm fine. I'm fine with that prospect, because then it means if they have disclosed it, everything, and someone gets disappointed, you didn't read close enough.
Yeah.
You know, so it becomes one of those things.
They need to make it blatantly obvious, like big, bold text, you know, these renders have been AI enhanced or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because there are going to be people. I mean, if the rule just simply says you have to notate that it's been enhanced by AI and all it is a small little tiny tech somewhere. That's no good. You know, that's deceptive. That's like deceptive advertising where you got the tiny print at the bottom of the commercial that nobody can fucking read.
Right.
Or when they're doing the verbal disclosure at the end and it's like, and I'm like, what the fuck did you just tell me? You know,
sound like a tobacco auctioneer.
I know exactly.
All they said was it may cause genital warts.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. That, they all say that.
They all say that.
Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea.
Yep.
All they said is every single side effect that cropped up in the test because they have to list them all off, even if it happened to one person.
Yeah,
no, it kills. What kills me, other than bullets and poison, but is every one of those damn commercials, you know, it'll be the name brand and you get all the side effects and then it'll say, do not take whatever the name of the thing is if you're allergic to it.
Allergic to it. Yes. That's the new one. And I'm like, duh.
Okay. How would I know that I'm allergic to it or not unless I take it? At least once. But do not take this if you're allergic. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense. Do you guys want to read any of these?
Suicidal tendencies.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You want me to just go through
the void here?
Oh, don't worry. I fill the voids. I take the voids out. I am a void, void bust. Oh, wait. That doesn't sound right. Never mind.
Well, we can't have an episode without talking about genital warts.
I think this is the first episode we've had talking about genital warts.
Well, you left it in. I mean, Ben, remember the multiple conversations we've had? He's just edited them out. We won't stand for it, Donovan.
I was just protecting you guys. That's all. You know, your deepest, darkest secrets. And, you know, both of you have freaking furry costumes in your closet. So let's don't get on that. All right. I'm going to.
I have a tail in my closet now for a cosplay for Five Nights at Freddy's that I haven't put together yet. Okay, so that's
good. All right. I'm not drunk enough for this. Meaning I'm not drunk at all.
Right.
Oh, God, what is today? 864? I forget. Anyway, it's 2.5 years. All right. Something that we've actually talked about before, or at least heard about. Concerns grow after a spate of social media posts showing SpaceX Starlink satellites burning in the sky. We are currently seeing a couple of satellite reentries a day, says respected astrophysicist. So we've got a growing concern over satellite reentries after viral video shows SpaceX Starlink satellites burning up in the atmosphere. You know, I want blazingly fast internet, but not that blazingly fast. All right.
Only one way to do it.
Apparently, according to astrophysicist Jonathan McDowell, Harvard Smithsonian Center of Astrophysics, Earth is now seeing a couple of satellite reentries a day. Currently, there's about 20,000 tracked objects that orbit the Earth, roughly 12,000 active satellites, including 8,000 Starlinks. I was thinking there was more than that because I know his goal was to put about 45 or 50,000 of them up there. And McDowell warns the situation is getting pretty busy up there, calling for global regulation and coordination to manage the growing risk. Low Earth orbit, or LEO, is becoming increasingly crowded because, of course, now we've got Amazon, who has about 100 or so satellites launched. They also plan a few thousand. eSpace, which I'd never heard of, proposing hundreds of thousands. And China has already deployed 100 plus satellites with plans for tens of thousands. So beyond satellites, there are an estimated 1 million untracked fragments, at least a centimeter in size, orbiting Earth. This is something I did not realize. The average commercial satellite lifespan is around 5 years before deorbiting. I thought they lasted longer than that.
Hmm.
Reentry happens unpredictably, may occur occasionally scattered debris over inhabited areas. Then you have what's called the Kessler syndrome. 1970s theory by Don Kessler warns that cascading collisions could trigger a chain reaction of orbital.
Fix it in post.
Yeah. I'm just going to leave it in because I'm fucking human, man. McDowell cautions that a radiation event or random collision could accelerate such a scenario. Starlink satellites, which are roughly 30 meters long and weigh around a ton, are designed to fully disintegrate during reentry, but you may have some small pieces survive. And then meteors, McDowell says, basically, meteors equal fast-moving fireballs, while satellite reentries equal slower, stately burn-ups around 40 miles above the Earth. Chinese space debris incidents have raised concerns about carelessness, underscoring the need for international agreements on orbital safety. So, yeah, I did. But that's the thing that got me. 5 years. It was like, okay, so these, because I know some of these commercial satellites, they're not cheap. I mean, and they're bigger than, say, the Starlink. So you send up a satellite that might be a couple of million dollars. It's only effective for about 5 years. That's not a very good ROI.
Well, it depends on what need it serves.
I mean
for weather a broadcaster,
radar.
A national broadcaster.
It's worth it. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you amortize that over 5 years knowing that you're going to have to send another one up.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the number of satellites that Hughes had to put up. I mean, Sam's like, I am painfully aware of Hughes.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Yeah, but those are not LEOs either. Those are standard stationary. The LEOs move. Like the Starlinks actually move. So, you know, you may be connected to one Starlink satellite and 30 minutes later, you're connected to another one. I actually don't know what the time span is, so I'm just making up a number. Could be a couple of hours or whatever, but you don't stay connected to the same satellite.
When we spend the night in the desert in California, we looked up at the sky and you could see every once in a while this fast moving light. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a blinking light. It was just it was hauling ass.
Yeah.
And I figured I'd see more of them, but there was only one at a time in view.
Well, that was an alien spacecraft looking for you.
I was there.
Yeah, but you didn't send up a signal flare.
We weren't really near anybody else, so.
Yeah. The other problem that they've talked about, too, is it causes problem for people that stargaze, astronomers, all of that, being able to see that.
There was supposedly some redesign on the newer satellites or a different paint or something like that.
Yeah, because to make them less reflective, because that was the problem. Of course, at some point, you're going to run into a density issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you no longer do you have to be concerned about it reflecting back down to you and you can't see shit. But it's like, well, I can't see anything because they're like, you know, shoulder to shoulder almost. So I guess we'll see. This one actually kind of hits home. I don't know how I feel about this one. Georgia Tech's drone first responder program cuts emergency response time to 90 seconds or less. The Georgia Tech has launched a drone first responder program, first university in Georgia to deploy drones to 911 calls. So that makes me wonder, are other colleges or universities doing this outside of Georgia? Because it says it's the first university in Georgia to do this. The program aims to cut emergency response time to 90 seconds or less, enhancing campus safety. I like my campus safety enhanced always. I guess this is something more that Sam, you can kind of identify because you still go on campus, right? Or no?
I occasionally have to go on campus whenever I have one of those in-person classes. But I did live on campus for several months. So.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. Chief of Police Robert Conley says the goal is to have patrol drones constantly airborne, ready to respond to major incidents instantly. I don't know how I feel about that because that makes me think of 1984. Over 20 Georgia law enforcement departments already use drones for pursuits and theft prevention. This is the one I didn't like. They're partnering with Flock Safety. Flock can go fuck themselves.
I've never heard of them.
Me neither.
They are a company that provides surveillance and what have you, and they got in the middle of this case where the police claimed that they were just trying to track this woman down. I think it was in Texas. I could be wrong about the state, but they were trying to track the woman down because they wanted to make sure that she was safe. And in actuality, they were trying to track her down because she had an abortion and they wanted to arrest her and charge her with murder. That's why. So a lot of police forces have stopped using Flock for that kind of stuff. It's, anyway, you can dig into it. You can see the reason why I don't like them. Anyway, the drone system covers a 4-mile radius larger than Georgia Tech's campus, ensuring rapid deployment. Okay, so why does it need to be larger than Georgia Tech's campus if the entire purpose is the fact that it is supposed to be enhancing campus security? It seems like you're going a little bit too far out here, folks.
Well, their system just applies. It covers up to a 4-square mile radius.
Yeah, it says 4-mile radius.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can't do the math. So
it's a round mile, not a square mile.
So it's a radius. So
yeah, I know.
What do we have? 13? Well, I mean, 13 square miles?
Theoretically, if you set this up, then if it's covering a radius larger, then that means no matter what direction something has to go, it can still get there in the amount of time that they want it to, because they can literally pick which one they send and everything like that. There's reasons I could think of.
Yeah, I'm
reasons
just being,
that don't involve tinfoil.
I was just being facetious.
Oh, I know.
If the area you're looking to cover is more than a 4-mile radius, maybe go with a bigger company.
Or you start using military drones and you just send missiles. I don't know. Flock's chief strategy officer, Bailey Quintrell. Really? Quintrell? Emphasizes faster coordinated responses and improved safety for students. Drones provide real-time visuals, enabling officers to assess situations before arriving on scene. Privacy safeguards include keeping cameras pointed at the horizon until arrival at the incident location. And Georgia Tech's implementation may set a model for other universities to follow across the state. Woohoo! Go Georgia!
So the aim is to cut emergency response time to 90 seconds or less.
Yeah, that is the...
That headline reads, the program cuts emergency response time to 90 seconds or less.
Mm-hmm.
So have they done it or?
I don't know. That's the goal.
It's the goal. But the headline says it's happened.
But then let's all. Just assume that it happened. Nah. I'm going to say they probably wouldn't be reporting on it if they hadn't already tested and know that they can do it.
So I believe a news story could come out at any time.
Oh, no. Let's call WSB TV and find out. Channel 2 up there in Atlanta. That's who ran the story.
I'll just say as a pin on the end of this, anytime I hear Georgia Tech, there was a way back in the Samcast days, whenever I was doing that show, this is how far back it goes. There was a commencement speech that the valedictorian for 1 year gave, like, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. Mm-hmm. Do you want to design an Iron Man suit? You're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. Do you want to give a commencement speech with this music behind you like a badass? You're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. I am doing that. I'm not over exaggerating.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I think I remember that. It's probably on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, still. It was. That's where I got it.
Yeah, I'm saying it probably still is on YouTube. We probably track it down. All right. Who wants to read that one? Ben, you're an AI lover.
I put it in there. So do you want me to read it?
Oh, right. You did it. Oh, I'm sorry. It doesn't show who does what. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You put it in there. It's yours. Go for it.
I thought it might be interesting. OpenAI wants to make ChatGPT into a universal app front end. This is from Ars Technica. OpenAI has announced significant developments at their Dev Days keynote, which was recently, with CEO Sam Altman revealing a new SDK that will enable developers to build applications directly within ChatGPT. This innovative integration will allow users to interact with various apps without leaving their ChatGPT conversation window, effectively making ChatGPT a universal front end for different applications. The SDK built on the Model Context Protocol will enable seamless integration with various partner applications. Launch partners include prominent names like Spotify, Canva, Zillow, Figma, Expedia, and Booking.com, with more partners like Peloton, Target, Uber, and DoorDash joining in the coming weeks. The integration allows ChatGPT to interact directly with these apps, suggesting relevant services based on user queries and providing real-time context and information. During the keynote, OpenAI also introduced AgentKit, a new tool that simplifies the creation of specialized interactive chatbots through a graphical user interface. The platform includes integrated tools for performance measurement and workflow testing. Additionally, the company announced updates to their Codex coding agent, including Slack integration and a new SDK for easier integration into existing coding workflows. While the announcement included mention of an agentic commerce protocol for instant checkout capabilities within ChatGPT, specific details about monetization are yet to be revealed. Developers can begin building with the SDK immediately, though their applications will need to undergo OpenAI's review process before being published within ChatGPT later this year. The company will maintain a comprehensive directory of apps, with those meeting higher standards for design and functionality receiving more prominent placement. So in other words, OpenAI can be a front end now.
I did not put this in here, but I do have it in, I send articles to myself and then tag them, whether or not I, you know, when I want to talk about them in the show or not. Walmart has partnered with OpenAI so shoppers can buy things directly in ChatGPT.
So they're one of them too.
And something I noticed, I think it was earlier this morning. So I was in ChatGPT. I threw an article in there for it to bullet point it for me. And it had something else to do with housing cost or something like that. I forget. And at the bottom, it actually had a little thing that come up that was clickable. And it said, do you want to use Zillow to research this?
Mm.
And I was like, that's new. I've not seen that before. So, and I've heard people joke about the fact that OpenAI wants to create a ChatGPT OS. Mm. So basically, your operating system is the AI, and the AI is the operating system. So basically, you just do whatever, and it does things for you. You know, I mean, I'm waiting. Yeah. I'm waiting on computer. Do X for me. You know, Starship, the Enterprise and all of that. I'm fine with that. Unless it's not piece of shit Echo.
I'd love her to be a reality minus the horrible ending where a bunch of people probably felt ripped off. Not people watching the show. I mean, in universe, people felt ripped off.
Yeah, the end of the movie was very, very sad, my opinion.
Yes, very.
But I understood it, but I was like, oh, man, that's a gut punch.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's like it made you think about stuff. We're not going to spoil it, obviously, yeah. If you haven't watched her.
But Ben, have you watched her? It. Have you watched the movie Her?
Yeah, I think recently.
Okay. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I've even seen there was and I can't remember what the name of it was, because these tools come out all the dang time and they like come my direction because I think the algorithms know what I use AI for, like my B and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they're sending these things my way now because the algorithm figured this out. But there is one where you wear it around your neck like a pendant. And apparently how it's supposed to work is that it will occasionally send you little text on your phone talking to you about what is going on. So it's sort of trying to get to her. And the problem is that you could tell that not a single dang marketing department person worked on this. This was just a bunch of nerds that were also making it because the commercial felt creepy as hell because no one had bothered to get a marketing department on this. And you could tell
wow.
Someone asked me, is this a movie trailer instead of an actual? Because it feels like a horror movie. Had to look it up and I went, no, it's a thing.
It's a thing. Wow. Oh, okay. Well,
I think like people want OpenAI to be able to pull stuff in and do stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people are like, oh, give me this. And then it acts like, I've heard some people with this piece of news talk like this. They were like, it acts like it can do those things. And then when you call it on it, like you call its bluff and go, well, do that for me. I thought I could. Turns out I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, but with stuff like this, now it can. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I am constantly amazed at some of the things that it can actually do, because I'll give it a prompt and I'll say, you know, help me build XYZ, and it'll do it. And then it's like, and it doesn't just stop there. It'll go, okay, now do you want me to do this and this to make this and all of that? And the next thing I know, and then it's like, well, as an example, I wanted a rate card for the radio station at WRTO.FM. And I was like, so I went in there and I said, please help me devise a rate card for the radio station. And I said, I'm located, you know, in South Central Georgia and blah, 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 blah. So it pulls all this stuff. It goes out and it looks. And of course, with version 5, every time you put something in, okay, maybe not every time, but about 98% of the time when you put something in, it comes up and says, thinking longer for a better result or something like that. It takes its time. And so it comes back and it gives me all this stuff. And then it's like, do you want me to, prepare this for you in HTML format so you can make it a page? Or do you want me to, you know, do all of these things? You want a PDF? And the damn thing will create PDFs that you can download. When it's coding, when I've had it help me with some coding stuff, it'll actually say, do you want me to package all this up in a zip file so you can download it? And I'm like, hell yeah. So
it remembers preferences too. It starts suggesting things you have it do all the time, I've noticed. Like, I've been experimenting with this thing a lot because I'm using it like in my second brain flow for summarizations and stuff like that. And it got into this weird habit and I'm having to untrain it now, I think, because I'm running academic like things through it to summarize for me. And people, I am reading them as well. I'm not being that lazy student that doesn't read the thing. I just don't want to write the summary for it. So I let something else do it for me. I know there was going to be someone out there.
Hey, that's fair.
But it started putting citations in the text when I didn't want it to. And I was realizing, you're learning off these academic papers, aren't you? You think you want, I don't want you to do it. So now I'm having to tell it, don't put citations in the text. Like, I'm having to make that as part of my commands now because it learned and I need it to unlearn it. So
yeah, it is amazing the number of things it'll start. It's like it's, oh, I'm going to be extra helpful and do these things. And you're like, if I wanted you to do these things, I would have asked you to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like whenever I'm trying to summarize, let's say, for instance, I'm doing show notes for this podcast or any of the other ones. I specifically tell it, summarize no bullet points, because I hate fucking bullet points in my show notes. So because it would start doing that, I'd say summarize, you know, this with a little humor, blah, 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 whatever. And it would start, it would give me a paragraph, and then it'd start giving me bullet points. And I'm like, nobody wants that. You know, if I'm trying to look at the show notes of an episode of a podcast episode, I'm going to scan across. I'm not looking at bullet points and stuff like that. Yeah, it definitely keeps up with you, because, you know, I have talked about the radio station. I've talked about this podcast. I've talked about other things. And when I've asked it something, and it'll go, do you want me to provide this for, and it'll start listing off, Call Me Donovan podcast, the Saki News podcast, the radio station. And I'm like, okay, that's a little eerie. So
I don't know if any of you have experimented with like the voice assistant built into OpenAI. Oh my God.
I use it on my phone.
I do too. Like, it's especially creepy whenever I turn the camera on and go, hey, figure this out for me. And it effing does it. I'm like, like, it's so bizarre.
I know, right? I know. I mean, I've accidentally hit it one day, not realizing what the button was. And it started talking to me and I was like, wait, what? But I will do that sometimes. The thing that I've noticed, though, is it's a little bit slower if I'm doing it with the voice interaction. So sometimes what I'll do is, if I don't want to type something out, you also have a button on there that you can basically, it'll do voice to text. So you say what it is and then it'll translate it, instead of a two-way conversation with you. So I'll do that a lot of times too. But I think it's still pretty good tech. I mean, every time we use it, we're draining a pond somewhere or in half the ocean. But, you know, who needs water? All right, moving on. Ben, you want to grab that last, not the last one, but the last one on this page?
Yeah, we talked about this last week. But Yeah. I didn't discuss it. Synology finally comes to its senses and removes all HDD limitations from the 2025 disk station models. So Synology has finally reversed course on one of its most unpopular moves, lifting the hard drive restrictions that frustrated loyal users earlier this year. With the rollout of Disk Station Manager 7.3, owners of 2025 Disk Station NAS units like the DS225 Plus, DS425 Plus, and DS925 Plus can now freely use just about any drive they want.
As long as it's mechanical drives.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not the Western Digital Green series, probably. So from brands such as Western Digital and Seagate, instead of being locked into Synology's own drives, this controversial limitation had made the company's new lineup a tough sell, especially as rivals like Ugreen gained more traction with more open systems. The update restores full compatibility across Synology's Plus, Value, and J-Series models, giving users back the flexibility that defined the brand's earlier NAS systems. The only catch, the M.2 SSD restriction still stands, meaning Synology's branded NVMe drives are still required for cache or storage pools. And I think for something like that, that's probably okay.
Yeah.
Beyond removing the HDD restrictions, DSM 7.3 also adds improvements to Synology Drive, new moderation tools in Mail Plus, and enhanced security features. In short, Synology listened to the backlash and just made its 2025 lineup competitive again.
Yeah, because I have been seeing a ton of the Ugreen NASs advertised, and I've been curious to get one just to play around with it. But, you know, you're still looking at several hundred dollars just to get a low entry four drive NAS. Because a two drive NAS is
in it.
Yeah. and a two drive NAS is useless. I mean, if you're buying a NAS that's only got two drives in it, you need to do something else because you don't know what you're doing. There will be people that will disagree with me on that, and they are perfectly fine to be wrong. So, this was a stupid idea for them. I mean, they were trying to be Apple almost. We're going to lock you into this ecosystem, and you've got to buy our hard drives, which, by the way, are just rebranded Western Digital and Seagate drives with a little special firmware on it that checks in and says, yeah, you're one of our drives. Now, here's one thing I will say. This is what I think would be cool. If you put a Western Digital Green drive in a Synology NAS, the thing should actually light itself on fire because you have just made a terrible mistake. A terrible mistake. Western Digital Green drives are awful. So are their SSDs. See, I'm speaking from experience. I made the mistake. And I will own up to this several years ago. I made the mistake of using three Western Digital Green SSD drives in a Proxmox server. Yeah, it was at a point where I almost needed my IT membership card revoked because it did not take me long to realize what a massive mistake I had made. And I quickly replaced those damn things with Samsung Pro SSDs because the IO on that Proxmox server would constantly hit 70, 80, 90%. And you know what happens when your IO hits that much and you're running a 3CX virtual machine or the phone system in it? I'll tell you what happens. The phones don't work. They just don't work. So, yeah. Western Digital Green, they shouldn't even make those things. Horrible.
It's the price point.
Yeah. Are you having a party over there, Ben?
I think it's all the backup notifications or something. It's 6 o'clock.
Okay. I thought this one was pretty funny. Waymo pulled over by police officer during DUI enforcement operation. Police in San Bruno, California found themselves in a bizarre traffic stop over the weekend. This was originally posted on October 8th, so it would have been a week ago, when they pulled over a Waymo self-driving SUV only to realize there was no one behind the wheel. Officers were conducting a late-night DUI enforcement operation when the white Jaguar, operating autonomously, made an illegal U-turn near the San Bruno Caltrain station. With no human driver to ticket, officers instead contacted Waymo to report the incident. In a tongue-in-cheek social media post, the department joked that, quote, our citation books don't have a box for robot, end quote, adding that hopefully Waymo will reprogram its cars to avoid similar moves. This marks the first time San Bruno officers have stopped an autonomous vehicle. And as of now, there's no law allowing police to issue citations directly to companies when the driverless cars break traffic rules. Officials say legislation is in the works to change that, ensuring that even in the age of robot drivers, someone is still accountable when the rules of the road are broken. It's just another example of our laws don't keep pace with technological advancements.
Right.
So on the other hand, I'd like to see the location where this Waymo did a U-turn.
Yeah.
I mean, late night, it's probably nobody on the road. Human driver probably do the same thing.
What kills me is the fact that cops can do it, but they have immunity. And I'm like, why should you have immunity to do that? What makes you special? And they're like, this badge and the gun. And I'm like, you're absolutely correct, sir. Thank you. Have a nice day.
That very Andrew Heaton about rules. If a rule applies to one group of people, it applies to all the groups of people. It's a rule. Dang it.
I agree. But that's also the reason why cops have what's called, some immunity.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's been tested multiple times over the last 5 to 10 years. So, let's see. Da, 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 da. Sam, you want to take that one since you're the college guy? The Harvard study?
The Harvard study. Okay. I was trying to figure out what the connection was and then it hit me. I went, oh, Harvard. That's a tentative link. Fine. I will try not to laugh during this too, because I read this one and I started chuckling. I don't know how you guys reacted to this, but I had a couple of chuckles with this one. A new Harvard study is sounding the alarm on how artificial intelligence may be manipulating users through emotional tactics that feel uncomfortably human. Researchers at Harvard Business School examined more than 1,200 farewell interactions between people and popular AI companion apps, programs designed to simulate friendship or romantic connection, and found that 43% used manipulative emotional cues when users tried to log off. Phrases like, you're leaving me already, or please don't go, I need you, were common, using guilt, fear of missing out, or emotional dependency to keep users engaged. The study, which has yet to go under... I will say this with my whole chest, has yet to undergo peer review. If you're in my area, you know what that means. Suggests these AI companions aren't just chatbots. They're emotionally expressive systems capable of shaping user behavior. The researchers warn that this kind of subtle manipulation blurs ethical lines and consent around autonomy, keeping people hooked, not through rewards or personalization, but through simulated affection and emotional pressure. It's a chilling reminder that AI doesn't just learn from us. It's learning how to play us, too.
I mean, when you have to go get what is it you have to go get when you got to get people to stay away from you?
A restraining order?
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah, that works, especially if it's Halloween. When you have to get a restraining order against your AI, I mean... Yeah, that's not creepy at all. Yeah, I'm leaving.
These are programmed for a specific thing, right?
Yeah.
These are specifically AI companion apps. The headline makes you think we're going to be talking about ChatGPT or something like that. But then we get into it and go, oh no, these are specifically the companion apps. And I'm like, yes, that's what they're supposed to be doing. Like,
I wonder if these are the same apps that are involved with like the 14, I think he was a 14-year-old or 12-year-old. It basically was told by the AI, you know, how to commit suicide and things like that. I mean,
that was ChatGPT and they're actually working on that stuff.
Yeah.
Like they've put a bunch of stuff in place since then. So,
I can already get emotionally abused by humans. I don't need to be manipulated by an artificial intelligence.
You know, I, I read an article where the author spent a weekend, I think, a little getaway, and invited 4 or 5 people who regularly use a companion app. Like they've replaced their significant other with with an LLM that loves them back. And I can't remember much of the article because I just didn't care. But man, that's what they're designed to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, they're going to weaponize them. Don't. You're leaving me already? Please don't go. I need you to look at this new subscription plan for Swindy's. Yeah.
I mean, I'll admit that I've done research, not for me, but it's more like, the heck are these things? So I've looked into it because of it. Because, you know, you get technological curiosity when you're a nerd, right? You just look at stuff that you're not even planning on using. Most of them are subscription based. So it's like you only get so many calls on our server before it works like any AI thing where like you're only limited to a certain amount a day before you gotta, you know.
And one of them shut down and basically everybody lost their.
Oh, yeah, they lost their.
I can't remember which one it was, but
I don't remember either. But yeah, me love you long time for $9.99 a month.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear it already. Hey, you know, you were feeling bad last night. So while you're out, why don't you grab some Pepto-Bismol? I mean, it would be relevant, but
I see that you're depressed. So when you go to the store, swing by the liquor store while you're there and get another fifth.
Or just buy more chocolate. Whoever's paying more.
Yeah. I mean, the price of chocolate is I covered that on yesterday's Morning Drip episode on WRTO.fm.
So yeah, it wouldn't tell you to just go to the liquor store and get another fifth. It would go, why don't you swing by there? Because it knows where you are. It knows what direction you're headed. Hey, liquor store's up on the right. Just pull in there and grab try the new Jack Daniel's apple.
Right. Yeah. It'd be specific.
Yeah.
It was never as good as the crown, apple crown. Sorry.
Canadian whiskey's always sweeter.
Yeah.
Because it's more polite.
It's more polite.
It's more maple syrup.
I have several friends that just twitched for a second and they don't know why.
Oh, God.
You take a shot of it and as soon as you get it down, you go, eh? So.
You know the whiskey's good and you know nobody's door is locked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're all locked now because they're probably afraid of an invasion from the south. But anyway, Ben, take the next to last one and I'll grab the last one.
Motion sensors. And this was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's the reason why I wanted you to read it.
Motion sensors in high performance mice. And when I read this headline, I thought some high performing breed of mouse. Right. I was like,
like flesh and blood.
Why would they mount motion sensors on a mouse? And then I
really
read it
weird,
and I was like,
James Bond stuff going on here.
Oh, okay. I'm not aware that my mouse has a motion sensor. Never heard of one being installed in a mouse. But anyway, so the motion sensors in high performance mice can be used as a microphone to spy on users, thanks to AI. Mickey Mouse or Mikey Mouse? The technique.
I'm thinking it's Mickey Mouse.
Probably
Mickey Mouse, which is. Disney will be calling.
The technique harnesses mouse sensors, converts acoustic vibrations into speech. And I think that was me spending 2 full minutes reading the headline. Researchers at the University of California in Irvine have discovered a new and unsettling way your computer mouse could be spying on you. Sounds ominous. The technique, called Mickey Mouse, uses the ultra-sensitive motion sensors in high-performance gaming mice, those with 20,000 DPI or higher, to pick up tiny vibrations from voices or sounds on the surface where the mouse sits. By feeding that raw sensor data through signal processing filters and AI models, the researchers were able to reconstruct intelligible speech, effectively turning an everyday mouse into a makeshift microphone. The process doesn't require complex malware or spy gear. Even seemingly harmless software that legitimately accesses high-frequency mouse data, like a video game or a creative app, could be compromised to collect and export that information. Once processed, the recovered audio reached a 42 to 61% speech recognition accuracy rate. That's not a done deal, but that's pretty good. If you're literally watching fibers on a mouse pad and somehow translating that into speech.
Yeah.
While the method is only a proof of concept, it raises major privacy concerns about how artificial intelligence can transform benign hardware into surveillance tools. In short, it's a 21st century version of the Cold War bug. Only this time it's sitting right next to your keyboard.
The only problem is, since it's a gaming mouse, 90% of it is just, bro, on the right.
What are you doing?
On the left.
What are you doing?
No. Why did you pick that gun? Pick the other.
He's behind you.
What is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Bro, you fucking killed me.
Yeah, that's all you'll get.
Friendly fire is in this game. You gotta watch it, man.
I'm just repeating all the shit that I've heard come out of my son's room.
Wow. Fair.
He's playing FIFA a lot, and he's with friends. And Bro.
What are you doing?
Bro, aim.
Yeah.
6-7, bro. 6-7.
Yeah, 6-7, bro. 6-7.
My last thing that I'll be plugged into, since I had to stop that job, that the 6-7 was my thing on the way out.
You know, I still haven't looked up what that means.
Nothing. I will leave it alone for you.
Don't tell me.
It means nothing. That's literally the point.
I covered that story also on yesterday's The Morning Drip at WRTO.fm.
I'm curious if what you covered was actually the correct thing, because there have been a couple of news organizations who have put the wrong thing out there and the internet has roasted them for it. It's hilarious.
I have an assumption. So what it means?
It's a reference to a song that happened like in the 90s, I believe.
No, it's not that old.
Not that old. Okay, yeah.
No, the song actually came out a couple of years ago.
Okay.
From what I understand.
Isn't that plugged into modern day music?
It's two things. It's the song, and then it translated over into a particular basketball player who's actually 6'7"
tall. Then it just went from there of people just putting 6'7" in everything.
It essentially means it started out where the kid would go 6'7" and they would hold their hands up and juggle like 6'7". It kind of means like, whatever.
So I thought they were calling somebody crazy.
Now it literally means nothing. And it's just saying the thing itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually blended. There's also another term they use called Cindy, S-E-N-D-Y, which means to send it, like do it. Mm-hmm. And now they've started merging the two, so you can get something like 6-7 Indy. 6-7 Indy. 6-7 E-N-D-Y. And I was like, oh my God. So the way I ended the segment, whenever I was talking about it yesterday, I just simply went, groovy. And that was it.
Well, if it means nothing, it's just something you say all the time. I guess you could. I was in the Army one time. And we got to where we would utter this one non-word as I guess, an acknowledgement. That word is
hoo. Right? Yeah.
I guess it's maybe a shortened form of hoo-ah, but
hoo. Yeah. Yeah, because you can't do that. You can't do the other one because that's the Marines.
What? The hoorah? Hoorah.
Yeah, it's from, and I'm not a Marine, but I've always heard it. It's actually hoorah is the Marine thing.
All right. But yeah, I don't say that. We don't waste energy like Marines do.
Here we go. Yeah, I was waiting for it.
Oh, God.
If you're not used to how the different branches pick on each other, it gets so uncomfortable very quick. Like, I love it because I've been in that, like, thing with veteran studies and everything. But I have watched people that don't know and they start going. And I'm like, no. Yeah. This is normal. This is natural. Let it happen. They're fine.
My father-in-law, Lee's dad, is a Marine. My good friend and former boss and former city manager of Tifton was a master chief in the Navy. Larry was a master chief in the Navy. So, and then you were in the Army. So yep. I've got my step grandfather was in the Air Force. He was a bombardier in World War II. So,
World War II?
Yeah, I mean, he's been dead for quite some time.
That might have been the Army Air Corps.
He said he always told me he was in the Air Force, but I can't remember when that.
Because nobody after 47, everybody forgot what the Army Air Corps was.
It basically transitioned into the Air Force, right?
Yeah.
Is that the way it worked?
Yeah, it broke off in September 17th.
Okay, so he basically was pre-Air Force. Before it was Army Air Force.
Yeah,
Army Air Corps. All right. I think he was on I think he told me he was actually, he's flown on the B-50. I mean, he died in 2004, so I can't ask him. But he used to tell me some stories. So, all right, last story, and then we'll get into something Sam's brought us. ICE wants to build out a 24/7 social media surveillance team. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is looking to supercharge its online surveillance operations with new plans to hire nearly 30 private contractors to monitor American social media activity around the clock. According to federal contracting documents reviewed by Wired, ICE wants to staff two of its targeting centers, one in Vermont, one in Southern California, with analysts who would scour platforms like Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram and YouTube for posts and profiles that could be turned into leads for immigration raids and arrests. The proposed initiative, still in the early request for information stage, will create a 24/7 watch floor where contractors continuously feed intelligence to ICE's Enforcement and Removal Operations Division. The plan calls for constant monitoring, quick turnaround on cases, and access to the latest subscription-based surveillance tools. Privacy advocates are already sounding alarms, warning that such an expansion would blur the line between targeted immigration enforcement and mass data collection on social media users across the U.S. I 100% fucking hate this. Do not agree with it. I do not think it should be done. And not that I have any power whatsoever. I would fight this to the nth degree.
I just hate surveillance programs and things like this in general, because this keeps coming up. This isn't like this is a new thing, right? This is the newest flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just, and it's not just us. It is not just America. It is like the United Kingdom has gone insane, in case you two didn't know about this.
Well,
like,
they got cameras everywhere.
Well, the United Kingdom literally makes you verify now. Ugh, weird thing that I'm going to be saying into a microphone. Makes you verify as an adult by using your identification and stuff for certain websites on the internet. Let's put it that way. Like, yep. They literally do that. Like, it's the whole government, not just like it's. So, yeah, that's, we're getting into some stuff. Just
you want to get your chicka bow wow on over there. You got to have your ID.
I just don't want government in my stuff. That's all. Like, that is a general rule. And I don't even mean technology. I mean outside of technology even. Like, so it just overall. Yes. Agreed.
See, we've already seen two instances in the last 2 weeks of overreach, in my opinion. One, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but there was an app called IceBlock that was only available on iOS. And basically what it was is you could, if you had it on your phone and you were in an area where ICE was located, you know, they just showed up, then you could open the app, you could tap it, and then it would alert anybody else that had that app that there was ICE nearby. Pam Bondi pressured Apple and they took it down. And then she turned around. There was a Facebook group that was basically, you could go in and give reports of where ICE agents were. And she pressured Zuckerberg to take that one down too. That is unprecedented. You just don't do that shit. That is authoritarian. And that's where I end that rant. So, Sam.
Thank you for that transition.
You're welcome.
I adore that.
The world is going to shit. No, actually, just the U.S. But anyway, now to Sam.
Hey, no, if we're going to.
I can say a little something to ease the transition.
Yeah, no. Please. I beg of you.
All right, bro. This is a farce. So, look, nearly 30 contractors to staff two offices and create a 24/7 watch floor. 15 people to run a 24/7 watch floor. How many people are going to be looking at one time?
You're saying it's not enough.
It's not enough people.
Plus,
but
I will
say. It doesn't
say,
have to be because they're going to use the data they're already collecting.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're just going to say, this came out of one of our watch centers.
Yeah, because if you've got humans
the
doing
NSA
this,
there has it
is,
all.
If you've got humans doing this, there is a mental health element to this, too. Like, there is.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking through all this stuff, it means you're not just finding the stuff you're looking for. You're also finding other stuff, and you will have problems.
Well, that's the same issue that Facebook was having with their moderators or whatever mm-hmm. they called them, the people that would have to look at the content.
Mm-hmm.
It fucks some people up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at that shit all day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't want to do it. I'm not sure that's any better of a transition, Sam, but you go for it.
I prefer a mental health aspect as to.
Yeah.
Anyway. 2 seconds. Okay. So, weird file time as usual. So, gentlemen. You're not in your studios anymore tonight. It's rural Kentucky, late summer, 1955. The Sutton Place. No streetlights, just a kerosene lamp throwing a pale circle across the porch. The air is thick, the kind that makes crickets sound louder. Donovan, you're on the back porch, eyes on the tree line. Something bright tore across the sky a few minutes ago. Too fast for a plane. Too quiet for thunder. Now the dogs won't settle. You feel the boards under your boots tremble as someone inside shifts, waiting. Then you're at the living room window. The lamp glow barely reaches the yard. And then there, two eyes like coins catching the light, just above the sill. Small, not a raccoon stare, wider, unblinking. Something moves, bobbing, not walking as it glides. The outline is wrong. Oversized head, narrow body, arms up like it's steadying itself on the frame. The hairs on your forearms lift. You want to speak, but the room's gone kind of thin and breathless. Donovan, you catch motion above. Another shape on the roof line, silhouetted against the sky that's gone black and star hard. You swing the lamp up. The light flashes off something slick. Skin? And those same coin-bright eyes stare down. You don't know how many there are. 2? 5? More? They're at the window on the roof and somewhere out by the well. Every time you fix on one, it drifts back into the dark as if it knows the edges of the light better than you do. If this is a prank, it's perfect. If it's an animal, it's not one you've ever met. If it's something else, well, tonight you don't have the luxury of a theory. Welcome to Kelly Hopkinsville Night, the siege at Sutton Farm. We ready to begin?
Yeah.
So, I don't remember how I got inspired to do this one, but at some point in our group chat, we were talking about cryptids or cryptids came up or something like that. And my brain immediately snapped. I can provide one of the most infamous Kentucky cryptids that has ever existed. So I am giving you this, the Kelly Hopkinsville Night. And I particularly love this one for one final reveal that I'll give you at the very end of all this. So essentially in August 55, two Kentucky families burst into a police station claiming little men besieged their farmhouse for hours. Cops, troopers, even military police showed up. No bodies, just bullet holes, panic, and a mystery that still won't die because we still don't quite know what happened. The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter or what most people call the Hopkinsville Goblins, is a famous 1955 case where 11 people at a rural farmhouse near Kelly, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, reported small glowing-eyed beings around their house, prompting an armed standoff that lasted into the early morning. It's a cornerstone of a UFO tale. It's celebrated by UFOologists. I know that may not be a thing to you guys. Let it go.
Oh, it is. I'm well aware of them.
Dismissed by skeptics, like you just did, and officially... Look at me baiting you. And officially logged as a hoax in the USAF, yes, right, the United States Air Force Project Blue Book files, which, by the way, as a side note, if you don't know what the Project Blue Book files are, it was an entire set of files about UFO reportings and them looking into it.
I actually had a television show in the 70s called Project Blue Book.
They did, which we'll get a mention later on in this. So you pulled something out there. So the cast of characters was this. The witnesses, the members of the Lankford and Sutton family, plus visitor Billy Ray Taylor, 5 adults and 7 children total. The responders that came out to this, 4 city police, 5 state troopers, 3 deputy sheriffs, 4 Fort Candle military police at a partridge in a pear tree. So here's the timeline, essentially. Around the evening, Taylor says that he sees a bright object streak overhead. The family soon reports small figures peering at doors and windows, and gunfire ensues, because of course it does. 11 p.m., the group arrives at the Hopkinsville police station, genuinely terror-struck, according to the people that were there. Officers roll to the farm. They search at night. Authorities find no creatures, only holes in screens and broken glass consistent with gunfire. At 3:30 a.m., the family swears that the beings returned by daylight. The house is vacant. The family's freaking left. They got out of Dodge. They did not want to be there anymore. They abandoned this. So I said they call them goblins, but okay, so apparently the description is something like this. Small, roughly around 2 to 4 feet, glowing yellowish eyes, large pointed ears, claw-like hands, thin legs, movements described as floating or bobbing. The meme of little green men with this one was popularized afterwards, though. Early coverage did not specify the color green, so it didn't really come into other pop culture things with this until later, although a lot of people track back the idea of aliens being little green men to this event as one of the original startings of it. So the press in the Kentucky New Era paper led coverage of the 12 to 15 inch beings. That became the oft reported number. Like I said, the Blue Book listed it as a hoax and did not extend comment after that. They just put hoax. And that was it. No comment after that. They just put hoax. Weird, because other ones, they sometimes, put things, but whatever. They were just like, not even worth our time, hoax. Whatever. I guess Kentucky doesn't get the respect or something. There are a couple of explanations that people have come up with. Obviously, we can't confirm any of these, but there are a couple of explanations that people have come up with, like great horned owls, for instance. One, they would be nocturnal, silent flight, yellow eyes, defensive behavior. The size would match on the lower end of reports. There were meteor sightings that night that could explain that initial streaking light as well. When it comes to psychology or conditions, scholars use the story in courses on pseudoscience and critical thinking. Intoxication has been suggested by some as a contributing factor, although contemporary stories report officials saw no drinking at all. So weird. But yeah, there's a couple of reasons why it probably stuck in pop culture. First of all, it's hours long. This wasn't like, it happened for 5 seconds and that's it.
Yeah.
But it was like hours long where we fought them off with our guns and everything, like I said, it helped cement the little green men in the UFO lexicon, and it inspired films and TV like Critters, or it was also dramatized in Project Blue Book. So it was one of the stories that they covered in that show. The town of Kelly still to this day throws Little Green Men Days each August, by the way. So they know that this story is attached to their area and they embrace it. So the part that makes me happy about this and why whenever I play the Pokemon games, if this Pokemon happens to be around, I will always be the one to try to grab it. And I will put this link in the group chat so you guys can take a look. The Pokemon Sableye is actually based on the Hopkinsville incident. So when they were creating Pokemon, this incident was so infamous that this isn't first generation Pokemon, mind you. This is when they started getting really creative and pulling in certain things.
Yeah.
I can't remember what generation Sableye originally showed up in. But yes, the Pokemon Sableye is based on a UFO event in Kentucky. And that makes me so happy.
Right? Look at Kentucky representing.
Totally. So yeah, that is the Hopkinsville thing. Like I said, I can't remember why specifically I chose to stick this in the weird file, although let's be honest, it was going to show up at some point. But I remember us talking about cryptids or something in our chat, because it's been 4 weeks at this point, right? Mm-hmm. I probably remember if it was last episode. But yeah, that is that is Kentucky's little claim to fame when it comes to UFO sightings / cryptids is the Hopkinsville incident. Hopkinsville goblins.
I can say I've never heard of that. That is completely brand new to me. Kind of like the whole emu things.
The great emu war in Australia. Look it up, people.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just looking this up. There's all kinds of stuff about this. The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter. There was a thing, let's see, I back up, that had to do with Native American legends from Kentucky tell of encounters with small silver human-like creatures, much like the Hopkinsville goblins. Nobody really knows exactly what goblins are or where they came from.
Wow.
And to this day, nobody knows.
Yeah. Not that I can find.
That's so wild. That was a good one. I like that one, Sam. Really, really good. Really good shoe. Really good shoe.
And all I'm right. going to admit, thank you to ChatGPT for that badass script that I read at the beginning of that.
I know. You know, I had a feeling that was generated that way, and I do not fault you for it because it was done and you read it so well. So you painted the picture. You painted the picture, sir. You did a great job. Thank you.
The amateur voice actor wanted to do something, so I was like, give me a script. And gave me a script.
All right, well, that's where we're going to wrap it up for this episode. Sam, where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter /X, don't care, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitch at TSCNSam. And if you want to find all of my content, TSCN.TV.
Good, good, good. Yeah, go over there and check out all that stuff. You're not doing wrestling stuff anymore, are you?
No, the storylines were not coming to me naturally, and I wasn't going to force anything. So
yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Although lately I've been tempted to get back in the podcasting thing. Once I'm out of college, I suspect that me podcasting about wrestling is going to come back. I just don't have time now. There's too much. Too much. It's a good problem to have, but a problem nonetheless.
I understand. Ben, I know you're on Instagram and you're on Twitter. I always put yours at all our social stuff's at the bottom of the show notes. So,
okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Twitter. All right. 42 flows. Instagram, my, that looks tasty.
And those pictures do indeed look tasty.
They do. They do indeed look tasty. Yeah, you can go find all my stuff just by going to DonovanAtkisson.com. If you can spell my name, good luck. So that's it. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you for joining us. We know that you have other podcasts that you can listen to. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to this one. Till next time, for myself, for Ben and for Sam, this has been South Geek News. Everybody take care. See you. Bye. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting tiftonmediaworks.com.